Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. In this episode, I'm talking about leading leaders, primarily aimed at larger engineering organizations. We're looking at some of the lessons from very successful CEOs on company leadership and applying them to engineering leadership. I'm going to paint the picture of an awesome large team and then break down how we can get to that position in our own unique way. I'm your host, Adam Horner. As a coach for CTOs from startups to enterprises, I empower tech leaders to escape the cycle of lurching from crisis to crisis and build the skills to lead with confidence, clarity, and purpose. I provide practical, personalized coaching tailored to the challenges faced in your organization, helping each CTO shift from reactive problem solving to proactive, strategic leadership. I help each CTO forge their own path for growth, allowing them to delegate confidently, align engineering with the business, and fully step into their role as a trusted, respected peer at the executive table. This podcast enables me to bring some awesome playbooks to you and the many CTOs that are looking to broaden their knowledge base. Between me and my guests, we cover valuable topics for executive tech leaders, providing insights, strategies, and practical advice to help you build and refine your own playbook so that you can excel as a CTO as well. This episode does build on top of some of the ideas from episode 32, where I spoke about managing engineering performance. So if you haven't listened to that one yet, it might be a good idea to go and queue that one up first. So for us to talk about large organizations, let's first of all define what I mean by a small organization. So in this case, a small organization, any typical startup, SME business, bootstrap business, something where you've got less than 20 engineers, roughly two teams, maybe a few ICs, individual contributors, reporting to the CTO. In this organization, one-to-ones are the principal method of personal development and internal coaching. And this works fine as a system and a process up to about somewhere around about 40 engineers. But beyond that, there's a couple of things that begin to happen. And it's almost without fail. The two things are politics and repeating yourself. So why does politics happen? It's one of those things where we think, oh, we'll grow a startup and we're not going to have any politics. We're going to have a politics-free organization. We're going to make sure we stamp it out whenever we see it. And it's a really good aim. But once you get to a certain size of company, politics creep in. And there's a bunch of reasons for it. You can't know everyone personally once you grow beyond a certain size. There's less trust inherently when you've got more people. There's some people you trust more and some people you trust less. And on that note, there's a greater variety of skills, of seniority, of capability, and a greater variety of focus. Some people are more product focused. Some people are more engineering focused. Some people are focused on design and UX, etc. We also, in a larger organization, tend to end up with dedicated managers, which is a very different role than you've had previously, where you tend to have leaders who lead and do, sort of the player coach, if you like, from the football world or soccer analogy. And the other thing that we end up with large organizations is some sort of outsourcing or remote working. Maybe it's multiple offices. You've got different locations, sometimes different cultures as well. And as a result of having so many people and so many different teams, you end up with an almost inevitable knowledge asymmetry. Some people know more than others on certain topics. And this is where politics begins to breed. Because of this less trust, less information, less parity of information, rumors start, people start suspecting other people of having things, doing things in a different way or to greater advantage or with more favor. And this tends to be where politics starts from. So beyond a certain size, you will get politics. And it happens. And the other thing you get that I mentioned is repeating yourself. Now, as a leader, you expect to repeat yourself. There's some statistic that says you need to say something 8 times before your audience has even really heard it for the first time. So there's an element of repeating yourself that happens in any organizational size. But with a large organization, what you find is that there's the straightforward, repeated communication happens a lot more. You've got more people, more teams, more forums, more meetings, more different kinds of meetings in which you will need to relay information and you'll be needing to say the same things again and again. you also end up with similar events or similar situations, but with different people, different leaders, and at different times. And they may be very similar because of the fact that your organization has a similar product, the same customers, the same industry that it's working within. And so therefore, issues come up at different times. And if you don't have a good information sharing or lessons learned process, you can end up repeating exactly what you said to one team or team leader to another team leader a matter of weeks later, maybe it's months later, when they're encountering pretty much exactly the same issue. And the other thing you end up with in large organizations and why you might end up repeating yourself is sort of an inexperience asymmetry, where you end up with one team experiencing something that doesn't become an issue to another team until they need to start making use of the same data or the same process or the same mechanism. They then hit very similar issues or very similar questions get asked from the team. And that asymmetry of experience means that you end up repeating yourself for those reasons as well. So let's look at a large organization then, and let's look at a novel and innovative large organization. And I'm going to take one of the, I think at the moment, they're the most valuable company on the planet. Jensen Huang, who is the leader there, has very famously been reported to have 60 direct reports. That's a lot of people reporting into one person. And he famously says he does no one-to-ones, not a single one. Now, if you remember in the previous episode I was talking about before, episode 32, one-to-ones were the number one way of coaching, leading individual contributors in their role as they level up. So if one of the most successful CEOs on the planet by market cap doesn't do one-to-ones, how does he lead? There's a really good answer to this actually from Brian Chesky. Brian Chesky is the CEO of Airbnb, also, again, a very successful global business, which has grown very rapidly within the last decade. And he also does no one-to-ones. At least that's not quite true. He does one-to-ones, but he does ad hoc one-to-ones. And he's very clear about that in his video. He doesn't have any scheduled one-to-ones. So how do they actually lead their teams then? How do they develop their people? How does it work? Let's break it down. The basic version of it is that instead of doing direct one-to-one coaching, they're doing group coaching with the idea that when one leader encounters a challenge, the whole group, the whole leadership group, will help debug, resolve, come up with suggestions for how to fix that challenge. And in so doing, they all take part in that challenge that came up, and they all learn from the same context, the same issue at the same time, and they all share their knowledge, experiences, and hints and tips to overcome that or options that they could use to cover over it. So it changes the focus from being leader-led to being team-led, group-led, group coaching approach to leveling up everybody's experiences and knowledge. Now, this has a few interesting side effects. Number one, there's a shared context that is much wider in scope than you have when you're leading with a lot of direct one-to-one, point-to-point relationships. There is a very open feedback mechanism because you're literally saying it to the entire peer group. If you're one of those leaders in that group, when you give feedback, you give the feedback to, well, so everybody can hear it. So one of the rules of smaller organizations, leading organizations, is that you tend to say that you will praise in public and criticize in private. Well, suddenly this sort of group coaching approach changes that quite clearly because the feedback now is coming in a shared forum. In theory, a trusted forum, but in Jensen Huang's case, 60 people. That's quite a large team. It's quite a large group of people. On the flip side, you also get peer support. So all of your peers are able to support you at all times as well. So you can go to any one of them at any point. There's a much more shared context and you can go to them for direct help. There's also a shared ownership of the change management process because everybody's involved in all of the change management. Everybody is aware of all the change evolutions that are ongoing. And so therefore, everybody owns a part of the challenge. You can't say, oh, I didn't know about that. Not my issue. Because you did know about it, because it's a shared environment. And so therefore, there's a very strong alignment of those leaders. And that strong alignment is actually essential to make this work. In fact, what this does is it breeds a very high trust environment. The other thing that it does as a side effect is that it creates little room for unchecked politics. There will always be some politics, but the group itself will begin to self-moderate the amount of politics that are allowed, because most people don't tolerate that much politics. And if everybody has ubiquity of information, especially around the leadership, the amount of unchecked politics that can happen, rumors, accusations, conversations that happen behind closed doors, is reduced so much that the politics tends to reduce significantly in line with that. Now, there's a few things that help make this work as well. The direct reports of the CEOs of both of these organizations are themselves senior, experienced executives who are leaders of leaders. So they are people who can self-manage, self-learn. They've been in this role or kind of role for quite a while themselves. And the other thing that they're both very clear on is that one-to-ones still do happen, but they're not scheduled. So one-to-ones at this level, when they happen, they're ad hoc. And they operate as normal between ICs and team leads further down the organization. That doesn't change, but that's not mentioned in many of the interviews that they're in. So it leads a lot of people to assume that there's no one-to-ones done within the organization. And that simply isn't true. There are one-to-ones done, scheduled on a regular basis between individual contributors and their team leads. But at the executive level, at that high level, they're ad hoc and only as needed. And that is, again, part of the trust that's delegated down to them. So if that's the way that big organization runs its executive team, and a small organization is running with a more, let's call it a more traditional approach of one-to-ones and a quarterly summary of that and so on, then as a CTO, what can we learn from the executive teams of these very successful large organizations to apply to our engineering leadership team reporting into the CTO? What happens if we try and run our team much more like the CEOs run their executive teams? Well, it works, and you can get most of the benefits listed above that we just went through before, but there are some challenges. So you get the open team-wide meetings for strategy, for planning, for project management, for incident management, or crisis management. You can end up with an imperfect implementation of it from what you'd expect by looking at NVIDIA or looking at Airbnb. Why is that then? Well, one of the main reasons is because we've got very different levels of experience and skill. Typically, if you sort of think about it in terms of levels, in terms of people leveling up, then you would like maybe use the Radford scale or something like that. You'd think that in general, then the people in the organization reporting to the CTO are going to be one, two, or more levels down from those seasoned executives on average. And you've got some people who would be first-time leaders, perhaps. And so there may well be leaders within that group who still rely on one-to-ones for various reasons. Maybe they've literally just become a leader. They haven't been able to transition away from that to the coaching because it takes time. There's some skills that often are not picked up through that journey through engineering that leaders coming from other departments, sales, marketing, operations, will pick up on their route through. Skills like selling, skills like storytelling, skills like understanding the finances. And so, therefore, you end up with this imbalance that makes a difference between those executive teams and leading a CTO team. Should you try and make it work then, even though it's got all these imperfections and these challenges with it? Well, my view is, yeah, you probably should. It should work in most organizations, engineering organizations that are large enough. It works well with the principles that most engineer type people probably already have or aspire to. For example, equalized voices. So avoiding things like the loudest person taking priority or the squeaky wheel wheedling person. This is the idea that when somebody makes noise lots and often that they will get listened to rather than somebody who is quiet, and avoiding these passive observers, making sure that everybody's involved. And that's what I mean by equalized voices. This is generally a pattern that engineering types like, and this helps make this method work. Another principle that works really well is criticizing the idea and not the person. This is a core principle to making this group coaching type approach work rather than individual one-to-one feedback type approach. And the other thing is that engineers do like to build solutions collaboratively rather than having one person dictating this is where we're going to do it. Engineers love the concept of agile rather than the waterfall method or the sort of top-down command and control approach. And so therefore, these themes all fit in with this group level coaching type leadership approach. So if it's worth striving for, and it should work in theory, and yet we've got our one-to-one based leadership team, and we want to migrate from that over to the group coaching approach, how would we go about it then? Well, just like we do in almost everything else in engineering, we do a migration. So we're going to plan out a migration, and we're going to evolve our organization towards the point where we can do that. So what would be the first steps we take then? Let's break it down into something that we can actually start to put together in terms of clear steps of a pathway to go from where we are now to where we want to be. A roadmap. The very first thing that I would do then in this is that I would immediately start running team-wide planning and retro sessions, as well as probably the broadcast communication sessions, which are already happening. Those already got all of the leaders in them. So those three kinds of meetings would be the first ones to run. What would happen if your team-wide planning had all of your leaders in it every time you planned? Quite different, right? First of all, it feels expensive. That's the first thing to point out. It feels like you're taking a lot of time. So some time has to be given up elsewhere to make sure we've got a balance in terms of the pressures on everybody's diary. So in order to make that work, then you have to get the more experienced leaders to drop the one-to-ones that they're currently doing in order to create time. The second step I would take then as well is that the consistency of information and data availability is ubiquitous. All leaders, all teams should have access, easy access to the same information, the same data, the same analytics. That way, when they are helping each other, which is what you want to have as an outcome of this process, there is no disparity of information. There's no difference between, oh, I know this and I know that. And therefore, people shouldn't be able to come from different conclusions other than from their analysis. So that is how you end up with one way of making the information playing field level so that there's no differences. And then the next step I would take is intention. What is it we're trying to achieve here? We're trying to achieve a way in which everybody has a similar way of thinking, analyzing, breaking down problems, and constructing solutions. So the intention then is to teach the way of thinking from the insights, from the learned truths of the industry, of the solution space, and then have a common approach to the reasoning method, the problem deconstruction and solution construction. And that is where we end up with this, everybody being challenged on the same things, everybody taking the same issues that come up and taking the similar approach to deconstructing those problems and constructing solutions as a group, as a team. How do we make this work? What's going to go wrong with this? What are the challenges? What's going to trip up this migration as we migrate across? One of the things I think is going to come up is going to be the expectations of where improvement comes from personally, personal development. And so therefore, setting the expectation early that there is a self-management of personal development and the ownership of personal development is on each of those leaders of leaders rather than on the CTO or the person who's at the top of the tree, so that there is a distributed personal development approach and that it's a shared learning environment so that everybody learns from everybody else's stumbles, challenges, mistakes, and crises. I think for the most junior leaders that you've got, some of them are still going to be in that area where they are missing a whole bunch of leadership skills, experience, and backgrounds that makes this easy and and seamless for them. So for those people, you're probably going to still need to do weekly one-to-ones, just as you would do for an individual contributor. The same approach, they've got things to learn, they need to develop fairly quickly, so weekly one-to-ones are still going to be necessary. But hang on, doesn't this break the model? It kind of does, but we're looking at this as a migration, right? So we're going to end up with a scale with our most experienced leaders of leaders on one end who are self-managing, self-coaching, and are learning from the group experiences and using their own discretion to grab an ad hoc one-to-one when they need it, when something comes up and it warrants a direct conversation. But on the other hand, on the other end of the scale, you've got our leaders who've just become leaders, who have still very much in the framework and mindset of weekly one-to-ones. And you've then got a scale in between where you've got your variety of different leaders at different levels of experience and education and knowledge that they've got so far. And so therefore, you'll end up with one-to-ones that are less often for the more senior, more often for those still getting to grips with leadership. And then there's one other thing that I'd put in place, I think, to make this work so that it doesn't break down and get lost in groupthink, essentially. And that is an open door policy. At the moment, when you create a group leadership area, you end up with people trying to normalize in that leadership team. They try to become as good as each other and level themselves based on everybody else. And one of the things that that can do is to suppress the flow of information coming up from individual contributors to the top leadership, which is a problem. So one way to combat that is to have a variant on the open door policy. Some in the old days, it literally used to be CTO had the corner office, for example, on the engineering floor. The door would be open at any point. Anybody could just walk into the office, close the door and say, I need to have a chat. There are a load of modern equivalents to that. It might be regular office hours where anybody can book office hours with the CTO during those times. It might be a combination of that so that anybody can request a meeting at any point and just schedule a meeting in the CTO's diary. But there needs to be some way where the upward feedback and mechanism to have non-broadcast information flow up to the CEO has to be possible. And that should be at every level as well. So it shouldn't just be the CTO who's got the open door. Each of the leaders within that group should have the same approach that anybody can come and approach them, because that way you can end up with basically whistleblowing becomes possible, which can get shut down if you just got that leader of leaders. So what are we going to expect then? If we've made this transition, we've got our leaders of leaders who are using the group planning, coaching, and feedback mechanisms in order to help each other, guided by the CTO. What next? What can you expect? What's going to be the outcome of this? You can expect rapid improvements, probably, to the quality and consistency of the leadership team with the open forum approach in place. However, politics, we mentioned politics at the beginning. Politics can still come up, can always come up. It always is always a thing in a large organization. So therefore, as a CTO, that's one of the few things that you need to stamp out ruthlessly and predictably. And that comes to, well, what is politics? What's politics and what's uncomfortable politicking in one organization may be the MO, the way of working, the modus operandi in another organization. So if there aren't company values defined at the organization level, define them at the engineering level. That helps to define what is and what is not politics, what's normal behavior and what's uncomfortable. Define that and then enforce it as a CTO. And that way you don't end up with any of these uncomfortable politics that people don't like and don't recognize. The other thing that you'll find is because engineering leaders suddenly level up very rapidly when they're learning from each other in this open forum, it can be quite brutal. And for leaders who are newly promoted, they've got a mountain to climb now. They need extra support. So that process of migrating from one-to-ones up to this group coaching and very frank feedback and open collaboration can be quite uncomfortable. So make sure that those people are supported, because that can be a challenge. Scheduling drop-in sessions in your diary, making sure there's feedback mechanisms to come from individual contributors, maybe even there's an anonymous feedback approach can make it easier for people to give feedback from the trenches, from the lower point. One of the CTOs I interviewed recently said he called it CTO coffee. Really simple. No agenda meeting where people could at any point just go and have a chat with the CTO to just feedback on anything they'd like to. And I think the other thing that is going to be powerful as well is to make sure that when you're in those group meetings, it's very easy as the CTO, when things are working, when things are going nice, the process is running, you can sort of sit there and relax and almost switch off, because the group runs itself very well. They're all looking after each other. They're all supporting each other. But if you get lazy, you can end up with this sort of groupthink setting in where everybody's nodding the same. Everybody's being very normalized in the way that they behave, the way that they think, the way that they present things. And you end up with a lack of friction. And so therefore, one of the things that you need to do is to make sure that the challenging and leveling up continues all the time, and that it doesn't end up with this sort of comfortable, stale, unchanging organization. That wasn't the reason that you put this in the first place. And one simple trick that I've seen used well by one organization is that the CTO there would deliberately change who spoke first in every meeting. And that shuffled things up enough in every meeting that it meant that things never got too comfortable. If it all works, what have you got? One of the strongest leadership teams you've probably worked with, probably one of the largest organizations you've ever worked with as well. Again, this does tend to work best in larger organizations, 50, 100 people in the engineering team or larger. So can we break this down into a simple set of steps then? I've tried. Here we go. So the number one thing on this playbook is only apply this once your organization is big enough to actually have some of the problems of leadership at scale. Again, make changes to fix problems, not for the sake of them. So are you seeing rumors flying around? Are you seeing information asymmetry? Are you seeing contradictory decisions in similar situations? Are you seeing unchecked politics? These are the warning flags that maybe you need to change the way that the leadership structure is working to level things out and try and even things up. If you're going through hypergrowth, this is not the time to employ this. Hypergrowth benefits from having a level of isolation between groups and areas so that you can rapidly add people to an organization. So that's the one exception to large organization where I'd say, don't do it during hypergrowth. It probably will be more work than it looks like it will be. Start with step two. So start with leader team-wide planning and retro meetings. Facilitate those meetings. Coach the leaders. Third, migrate the most experienced leaders you have away from scheduled one-to-ones so that the onus is on them to request ad hoc one-to-ones when they need it. And that way, that will begin to level out that balance between taking more time for leadership for the group leaders, everybody in larger meetings, and those more experienced leaders need to free up some of their time in the diary to make that work and make that happen. And losing those one-to-ones is one way of doing that. And then number four, the open door policy, the way of letting information come up through the organization so that you don't lose that ear to the ground, if you like, and you can still hear about things that are going on in teams where optimizations need to be made or things are broken as they go along. Hopefully, if you do that, you will find that you end up with a strong, rapidly learning, very senior leadership team who are constantly challenged and very effective. A ubiquitous leadership style and good results. I'd love to hear how you get on with it. As always, keep leading with impact. And I'd love to hear your feedback. Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.